Today we're going to be talking about an introduction to storage, what all this stuff is, and how it all fits together to create your own storage infrastructure. We'll start by introducing the five most important concepts in storage, that is, placing storage outside the computer, the difference between block and file-based storage, the importance of SCSI, what RAID is, and why it's important, and the three types of storage arrays. Then we'll talk about how everything can fit together to create a unified storage architecture. We're going to assume that you don't have much of a background in storage, but that's not really a problem because really there's not a lot of new concepts here. Most of what we're going to be talking about and most of the storage industry is going to be pretty familiar to most people in other areas of IT infrastructure. So let's start first with the concept of storage being outside the computer. This is something that really separates the world of enterprise storage from the world of storage that most computer people are used to. To most people, storage is captive. It's part of the computer. It's something that exists inside. Even if it exists outside, as in like an external USB enclosure or something like that, it's really captive. It's owned by that one PC. But on enterprise storage, that's not true. Really, storage is something that lives in the network, and many devices can access many storage devices in sort of a many-to-many function. Whether you're using fiber channel SAN, iSCSI, or network-attached storage, or any of the other newer minority storage protocols. This is an important concept, and it's an important thing to grasp because the benefit of this is tremendous. You know, one of the big things that we see when we're looking at storage infrastructures in terms of strategic consulting is that most people have very low utilization of their storage resources. So even though internal storage and captive storage may seem like a bargain, it's really not a bargain if you're only using a third of it or a quarter of it or even less than that. In fact, we find that internal disks, especially on smaller servers, tend to get used only about 10 or 15% of their total capacity. This can be a tremendous, tremendous shift in terms of the value proposition that you're thinking about. So if you're trying to save money by buying the cheap internal storage, you might actually save more money by spending a heck of a lot more money on external storage that can be utilized much, much more efficiently. So the concept of sharing storage is really critical to understanding enterprise storage. Now, as I said, there are three basic protocols that we're going to see in enterprise storage. We see block storage protocols like fiber channel and iSCSI, and file-based protocols like what's called network-attached storage, which is really either on the Windows side, CIFS or SMB, which is Microsoft's protocol for file system storage over a network, or NFS for the most part on the Unix side. These protocols predate the whole world of enterprise storage, but now we actually have enterprise storage devices that speak these protocols in a much more efficiently and scalably than a native file server would. So it's important to think that basically these two concepts, block and file. Block treats everything like a disk. It seems to be a disk to the host operating system, and that means only one person can access that information at once. That doesn't mean one person can access the storage system. It just means that the chunk of storage that's reserved for this computer is only accessible to that computer. Now, it's possible to share it with clustering and SAN file systems, and those are used somewhat, but really, those systems are also treating it like sort of a single owned piece of storage, and they have logic of their own that allows them to control access. On the file side, you know, it's much more like what we're used to in terms of file servers, meaning many people can access many files based on their location in the folder hierarchy and the file name. This is much different than block-based storage, and most people use this type of storage more in their everyday lives than block-based storage, really. Most computers end up just translating block storage into file storage with what's called a file system. So really, the difference between file and block-based storage is critical, but it doesn't mean that it's something that's going to drive you one way or the other, because the truth is that most applications can use either one. Most applications can use either type of storage. There's a third type called content addressable storage, which is something else altogether. It's like file storage in that it accesses a variable sized piece of data, but it doesn't access it based on a location. It accesses it based on a unique number. This means that you need special applications to talk to these devices, but it also means that it makes it much easier to move the data around in the storage system and scale it. This is a really whole different world than what we're used to, and most people are going to find that you're going to be looking at block and file storage for the most part. The third critical concept to think about is the importance of SCSI. Almost all block storage on the enterprise side uses SCSI. Now, that may come as a surprise to a lot of people because you're not seeing a lot of SCSI cables and SCSI protocol, referenced. But the truth is that both of the major SAN protocols, being Fibre Channel and iSCSI, both of them use the SCSI command set because it works and it makes sense. You can think of Fibre Channel as SCSI commands over Fibre Channel protocol, which is actually something slightly different, over either optical cables or copper cables even. And I think that confuses a lot of people that you can run Fibre Channel, something called Fibre Channel, over something that's not called fiber. But the truth is that it doesn't have to run over fiber optics. And much of the storage arrays actually use copper cables to interconnect to their own disk drives. But for the most part, outside, in the SAN, you're going to see optical cables. iSCSI, the other major protocol that we're seeing a lot, is basically SCSI commands over TCP/IP over something that speaks TCP/IP, which for the most part is Ethernet, which also runs over optical or copper cabling. In fact, it generally runs over the same type of cabling as Fibre Channel. But there's an extra layer in there, that TCP/IP layer. A third protocol that we're seeing a lot is not a SAN protocol, but then that's serial attached SCSI. This is the replacement for the old big bulky parallel SCSI connections. It is actually SCSI over Fibre Channel, just like what we would consider to be Fibre Channel protocol, except instead of running over a network, it only has part of the Fibre Channel protocol, and it runs over the same copper used by the serial ATA drives in your desktop at home. So it's kind of a hybrid of the enterprise Fibre Channel storage and the serial ATA you find at home. Very clever way to maximize the use of commodity parts, I should add. Really, when you're talking enterprise storage, though, you're going to be talking about either a SAN, which is block-based storage with Fibre Channel or iSCSI, or NAS, which is network-attached storage, a file storage network with CIFS or SMB on the Windows side or NFS on the Unix side. Lately, there's a new term that's begun to gain favor, and that's called FAN, File Area Network, which is just a network of NAS devices. The fourth concept that I want to put some emphasis on here is the importance of RAID. If SCSI could be seen as the enabling protocol for enterprise block storage, RAID is the enabling concept for all enterprise storage. This was a clever idea to make multiple disks act as one. What you get out of that is either increased performance, increased reliability, or both. And there are many, many different ways of combining disks together today. They're all called RAID, and they're all based on the same concept of making multiple disks act as one. Briefly, the different types of RAID that you're going to encounter are RAID 0, which is a stripe, which has poor reliability but no wasted space, and it's quick. RAID 1 is a mirror, meaning all the data is sent to two disks at once, and all the disks, each disk contains the same information as its partner. This gives you very good reliability, but unfortunately it means you're sort of wasting one disk for overhead, for protection. It can be quicker, though, since many RAID 1 devices can actually read from both disks instead of just one disk, but writes might be slower because it might have to wait to write to both disks before committing that the write has been made. Another RAID level that you're going to see a lot of is RAID 5, which is what we call striped parity storage, meaning that you stripe data, as in RAID 0, across multiple disks, but one of those disks contains sort of a checksum, So if you lose a disk, you can actually reconstruct all of the data. This allows you to use one disk out of 3, 4, 5, however many, as a protection space. But critically, it rotates which disk holds the protection, so you're actually using all the disks in a pretty balanced fashion. So RAID 5 is very popular. There's another thing called RAID 4 that you might see. That actually reserves one disk only for this protection, this parity information. This seems like a good idea, but unfortunately that disk can sometimes become a bottleneck, or it might actually reduce performance by having to read all of the data on all of the disks again and again, unless you've got a device that really knows that it's speaking to RAID 4. So you're really only going to see this on certain specialized devices, like the file servers from Network Appliance, that are all built around this RAID 4 concept. These days, too, we're seeing a lot of other kind of RAID mashups, all sorts of crazy things. It's pretty common to stack RAID levels on top of each other. So you get RAID X plus Y, where X is on top of Y. So, for example, RAID 0 plus 1 is mirrored stripes of disks. RAID 1 plus 0 is striped mirrors of disks, and sometimes people call that RAID 10, because 1 plus 0 equals 10, I guess. Next, you've got RAID 5 plus 0, which is another common one, which people call RAID 50, which is striped RAID 5. There's all sorts of other combinations. You can go three levels, you can do all sorts of things. But generally what these mashups, these stacked RAID layers attempt to do is get the benefit of one of the RAID types without the limitations. So for example, RAID 50 has very little overhead for protection, very good performance, and it's affordable because you're not losing a lot of space, even though you're still getting decent protection. Another thing we're seeing a lot of these days is what we're calling RAID 6, which really just means that it has double parity. It does that parity, that protection calculation, either twice on the same in the same direction, or once in one direction and once in some other way. So, for example, if you think of a grid of disks, a matrix of disks, maybe it does horizontal and vertical calculations, or maybe it does diagonal calculations, or whatever. There are a lot of different ways that vendors have implemented this, but generally when they talk RAID 6, they mean something that has double parity. There's another thing called RAID E, which mixes a hot spare disk, which is a disk that contains no active data. It mixes that in with the RAID set, so you actually are able to use that disk performance-wise and get the benefit of that disk while still having that extra spare disk in case another disk fails. Some vendors also only apply RAID to a region of the disk instead of the entire disk. This is pretty common, initially on the EMC arrays, but actually is very common on a lot of the smaller startup iSCSI arrays now. That can provide a very interesting level of performance and availability where they can actually benefit from different regions of the disk performing better or worse, and it can make it more reliable because the loss of one disk might not affect as much data, or it might affect all sorts of data depending on how it's implemented. But that's another really common thing now. The fifth important concept that I want to mention here is that there are basically only three types of storage array. There are the monolithic arrays, which are big cabinets, the kind of things that people think of as storage arrays, big, giant, refrigerator-sized boxes with slots and slots of disks, based on the mainframe concept from way back when. These things generally scale very well and provide tremendous performance, and also come with a tremendous price tag because you're buying a lot of empty space if you don't populate it with all the drives. This led people to create what we call modular arrays, which have sort of a head, a control head, and then tray after tray after tray of disks. So you can buy just the head and a tray of disks, and then you can add more as needed. Unfortunately, these things tend to have more peaky performance. As you add more disks and more clients, the performance tends to trail off because that head really probably only has one or two controllers, and you can really probably only use a couple of heads, so it doesn't scale quite as well as the monolithic arrays. But these are pretty popular because you can grow them as you need. Now, there's a third kind that we're seeing a lot of these days, especially with the upstart CAS and iSCSI arrays, and that's this grid concept, which takes all of this and sort of applies the PC revolution to it. And so you have a huge number of nodes, each with only a couple of disks, but a processor and some connectivity out the back, and they all team up to pretend to be one big array. This can give you all sorts of benefits, and is something that's gaining a lot of popularity among these small startups. It's also popular, of course, because it means that they can buy commodity hardware and build a storage array out of that, which, you know, gives a price advantage as well. No matter what you're looking for, though, whether it's SAN, NAS, or iSCSI, whether it's monolithic or modular or grid, whether you want to go with an established company or a startup, there are lots of options. And really, most of the options work pretty well. You know, often people will say, you know, here's my application type, which type of storage array should I use? That's hard to answer because, honestly, almost anything will work. You can buy a NAS device and run a database on it. You can build a SAN with Fibre Channel for cheaper than you could build it with iSCSI if you're careful. And similarly, you can build it with iSCSI for cheaper than Fibre Channel. You can use NAS for archiving. You can share SAN storage with a SAN file system. There are really not a lot of limitations. You can pick almost anything as long as it works and build all of your storage system around it. So what do you do? It's very confusing. Now, the best choice that you can make is the one that makes sense to you. If you have a limited budget, then you should look at something that's going to provide a lot of bang for the buck. If you have no tolerance for downtime, then you should look for a more established system that's been more proven. You know, pick the right tool for the job. You know, there's the old tale about, you know, you can use a wrench as a hammer, but it won't make a very good hammer. Well, you know, if it doesn't seem to make sense to you, if you're kind of scratching your head and saying, this seems awfully complicated, don't do it. Always pick the simplest and most straightforward solution that you can find. And always pick always err on the side of simplicity and having a single device instead of having multiple devices that you're going to have to manage if they're managed separately. So, for example, if you wanted to have some NAS and some SAN, but you're a small company, go for a device that supports, you know, iSCSI and the NAS protocols, and maybe Fibre Channel if that's what you need. But don't try to bring in two separate devices because it's going to be difficult to get utilization out of them. You're not going to get economies of scale when you're buying them. And honestly, it's going to be hard to manage because you have to learn how to manage two different things. Where if you bought a device that supports both of the things you want to do, you can end up with a much easier and more simple solution. On the other hand, if you're at a really, really big company and you can afford to buy a number of different devices, by all means, buy the best device for the job. You know, if you're building a high transaction database or something, by all means, go out and invest in enterprise Fibre Channel storage because it's going to work the best for you. But if you are, you know, trying to replace your file servers, you know, it probably won't make sense to put a NAS controller or a file server in front of Fibre Channel storage. Instead, you should just buy a NAS device and be done with it. So, you know, try to have the simplest, best fit that you can find. And, you know, think about mixing multiple things in one. You know, there are a lot of storage arrays that support both Fibre Channel and iSCSI, for example. So you can use the Fibre Channel for your established, you know, OLTP and Unix systems, and you could use the iSCSI for your Windows systems. And that way you're going to get better utilization of your disks and a better return on your investment. Plus, something that a lot of people don't think about is that a lot of these storage arrays, one of the things you get with them is advanced features like snapshots and replication, meaning copying the data from inside the array to a different array at a different location. That's a powerful, powerful feature. And if you have one device holding all your storage, then you can replicate all that storage off-site, or you can take hourly snapshots, or you can do something like that. That is a huge, huge benefit for your business, and you're going to be able to reap that reward only if you centralize your storage and only if you use one device. If you use multiple devices, then you're going to have multiple different types of targets on the other side of that link, and you're going to have to figure out how to use multiple means of doing snapshots and replication, because this is not standard at all. So make sure that you pick something that makes sense. Try to make it simple. Try to make it standardized. You know, in the end, you know, don't let these sort of prejudices and rules of thumb beat you, though. You know, I mean, if somebody says, oh, you know, you can't use RAID 5 for a database, or, you know, no way, you know, you can't use iSCSI for a mission-critical application, or you can't use Fibre Channel, or you can't use NAS, or whatever it is, don't listen to them. Think about it. Try it out. You know, bring the vendor in. Most of these vendors will be happy to set up an environment for you to test and see if things are going to work for you. The third thing, you know, that you want to think about is that it really isn't all about the technology, because in the end, all this stuff is pretty good. If you're not thinking about what your needs are, and if you don't know what the requirements of your applications are, if you don't know what your business users are demanding, well then, no matter which thing you pick, it's not going to be right for you. So spend some time thinking about the data that you have, doing some data classification, you know, talking to the users and saying, what do you want? What do you need from me? What can I offer you that's going to give you a benefit? And you might find that your notions of performance and availability and scalability might go right out the window once you talk to the application owners, the business people, and find out that they have totally different expectations from you. So I hope that this has helped think about the wide world of storage and maybe set you on a course to pick the right storage solution for you. Thank you very much.